This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Vanderberg out there in L.A. Big Nasty Alfred Cunnable will be joining us in the next segment. CPT is real, y'all. The struggle is real. But what's going on, Brother Marcus?
What's up, man? Long time no talk.
Yeah, man. How's your week been?
It's been good. Just the usual. Work, sports, in that order.
Okay. I'm sure you made some time for TNA. We'll talk about that later on today.
Nope. I said work and sports. I didn't watch Raw either, so don't feel bad, TNA.
Well, I am currently watching TNA as well as on the other channel I'm watching, of course, Game 4 of the NBA Finals between the San Antonio Spurs and your reigning and defending champions, the Miami Heat. And let's go back to Game 3. Let's take a step back before we look forward, Marcus. And Game 3, I wasn't surprised that the Spurs won. But the way they won was pretty surprising. The final score was 111-92 in favor of San Antonio. But anybody that watched the game will tell you that, you know, that score is not indicative of the beatdown that San Antonio put on the champs.
Yeah, I mean, when you're hot, you're hot. And no one was expecting San Antonio to open the game shooting 90%. So it was one of those games where, you know, if it was Popovich, he would have rested his starters, but, you know, Coach Spo kept his guys out there, and they tried to cut the lead down some, but didn't have much luck and eventually ran out of gas. So looking back at things, it might have been wise for Spoelstra to pull some of those starters in the third period instead of having them try to, you know, come back. But we'll see what happens. It's Game 4 isn't looking good as well for Miami, so this is if they go down 3-1, that's tough. That might be a good night, Miami.
Yeah, and it's not like the stars didn't show up. James and Wade had 22 points each, but the bench, you know, the bench for Miami did nothing, and they really, you know, haven't contributed a lot in this entire series. You know, and I think maybe the most conspicuous by his absence is you know, a guy that if you're a fan of Nintendo Power, as Marcus Vanderberg is or was, you know, who when you were looking for your favorite character back in the day, he was always dependable. He was always reliable. It's a me, Mario. And when this Heat are looking for somebody to handle the rock, somebody to provide them with offense, somebody to provide them with defense, in the finals, unfortunately, it's a not Mario. Mario Chalmers, MIA, Norris Cole, not that much better. Birdman, yeah, he's contributing a little bit, but, you know, we're seeing right now, you know, going into the series, I was talking about just the depth of the Spurs, and we're seeing right now that the Heat, they may have the two best players on the court at any given time, but, you know, players, you know, I'll even throw Bosch in there, but players 4 through 9, you know, you can't really count on them, at least not thus far.
No, not at all, and it's really a miracle that the Heat have two titles when you consider their point guard for those two titles have been Mario Chalmers. I mean, he's, you know, people ripped on Indiana for having George Hill as a point guard, but George Hill is 10 times better than Mario Chalmers ever will be. And it's finally catching up to them that they don't have a true point guard. Chalmers is not it. He had 2 points in Game 3. No field goals. He had 2 free throws. That was it. And he's become a liability. He's lost his confidence. You know, the whole running thing with Mario Chalmers, his teammates are, and Coach Spoelstra will just yell at him. And there's actually a pretty funny Tumblr that it's just videos and pictures of people yelling at Mario Chalmers. And based on the way he's performed in the finals, I understand why people yell at him.
And the thing is, you know, you talk about the Heat not having a true point guard. Even, you know, that first year when they got together, I think Mike Bibby was the point guard. And that was an over-the-hill Mike Bibby. So they never really had that true point guard, but they could overcome it because, you know, in the first and second runs to the playoffs, you know, they were one of the fastest teams in terms of pace in the NBA. And now they're really a half-court team. And if you don't have that guy that can create and open up opportunities for anybody else besides LeBron, you know, it just really clogs down that offense. As we've seen, you know, they haven't broken 100 points in any of the games in these finals.
Yeah, I mean, and they've had a point forward in LeBron for all these years, but there's only so much he can do, and I think he's finally hit that point where he can't do it all, especially a team against a team like San Antonio, and now, you know, the rest of the Heat are being exposed, and that leads us to the hot story from yesterday, from Wednesday, was the rumor that the Miami Heat are looking to take reduced contracts of the Big Three in order to recruit Carmelo Anthony in the offseason.
I was just going to say, you know, the Heat looking for Nirvana, and who do they look to allegedly or possibly maybe next season? Melo. But to me, I don't see that. I don't know. Do you see that happening? Because to me, I think it's a good move for Carmelo. But even if you're talking about Wade, Bosch, LeBron, you're talking about guys that are multimillionaires, they'd have to take a salary cut in order to make that happen, in order to facilitate Carmelo coming down to South Beach. And one thing I know about people that have lots of money, they like their money. And, you know, the Heat, the Big Three, they made the concession the first time to get everybody back together. But do you see them doing that a second time to bring Carmelo in? And is Carmelo really who they need? Because, like, as we just talked about, you know, scoring is not really an issue. It's somebody getting the ball to the players so they can be in a position to score more accurately and more frequently.
Yes, I could see them doing it. I mean, the fact that they did it the first time shows you that they're really about winning. And the fact that it's paid off, they have 2 titles. They're competing for a third, they've been in the finals all 4 seasons they've done this. That's impressive. And I think if they're, you know, if they're really about winning, then yeah, they would all 3 of them take another cut and pay. And let's not pretend like this is a one check household for any of these guys. We just saw LeBron James reportedly got paid $30 million for his Beats by Dre involvement. So these guys have multiple sources of income. Playing basketball is just one of many checks that they're getting. So yeah, it's not my money, but, you know, they'll survive. Second, as far as Carmelo in Miami, you know, Wade is not the same player he is, and it would give Miami another option. It would give LeBron some help. You know, LeBron is, you know, one of the few players that wouldn't mind or wouldn't be worried about his touches when it came to Carmelo, because I think he's content on, you know, making his teammates look good. And, you know, at Big Four, trust me, if they had Carmelo now and were able to give Dwayne Wade even more rest in the regular season, because as we've seen in Game 4 tonight, he's not himself. And whether that's his knees or he's just having a bad night, you know, the more options they have, the better when it comes to this team, especially the way they play in terms of having these extended playoff runs. They played more games than anyone else the last 4 years, and any extra firepower they can get is a good thing.
Yeah, especially in the East, you know, that tips the scale, it tips the balance. I just don't know if Melo, you know, is enough to get him another championship, because as we're seeing right now, you know, it's almost halftime and the Spurs once again are mollywopping the Heat. And it's almost funny because I think a lot of people coming into the series – they were looking at the Miami Heat from two or three seasons ago, and they're thinking that they're athletic and they're going to outrun the Spurs. But these are different Spurs. These are not your daddy's Spurs. You know, yeah, they got Duncan and Ginobili and Parker, but the rest of these guys, in particular Kawhi Leonard, who scored 29 in that big win in Game 3, you know, these are young guys. These are hungry guys. Patty Mills coming off the bench. You know, I think these Spurs are a different breed, and the West in general is a different breed. So if the Heat do acquire Carmelo Anthony, I think that's a great pickup. It's going to bring headlines and more fair weather fans, more bandwagon fans. But at the end of the day, I don't know if it guarantees them another chip.
I mean, there are no guarantees, but they would definitely be the favorites in that season for sure if they had all four of those guys in the starting lineup. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Duncan, you know, even though he's denied it, you know, if he wins that title, I could see him, you know, deciding to step down and step away. And I think it's going to be a package deal. When one decides to retire, the other shoe would drop with Popovich, because he's not getting, you know, any younger. He's getting up there. He's in his mid-60s, I believe. And, you know, with five titles and an aging superstar in Tim Duncan, I'm not sure if he wants to be part of that San Antonio rebuilding process. So it's just a matter of when. But, you know, I'm curious to see what they do with the point guard position, because Chalmers will be a free agent. I believe Norris Cole will be a free agent as well, but don't quote me on that. And they do need help. That's their one bit flaw besides their bench that they need to figure out what they're going to do there. But it's going to be interesting. And let's not forget, this is all going to be starting in a matter of a couple weeks. These guys have to either opt in or opt out by June 23rd, I believe. And then we have the draft that same weekend, and free agency starts in early July.
Yeah, and then there's still that looming question that I don't really think is a question, but, you know, you've got pundits out there in the national media saying LeBron is still not decided whether he's going to return or not. I think it's all but a lock that he's going to return. And if he does leave Cleveland, I don't think he's coming to you. If he goes anywhere, I think it would be, you know, out in your neck of the woods, Marcus.
Yeah, I don't see him leaving. If he were to leave, I think it would be L.A. just because it would be the best scenario, you know, in terms of sort of being a big city and similar lifestyle to what he has in Miami. And I'm sure he would have some role in the new coach. So I don't see that happening. But if it were, I think it'd be L.A., not Cleveland or Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron is going to want to play babysitter, for lack of a better term, to a team that still is going to have to go through some growing pains, regardless of the talent of those young players out there in Cleveland.
Yeah, and Cleveland's on the right path. You know, they will probably let Luol Deng go in free agency, which is fine. But, you know, if the number one pick again, they got to figure out what to do with Kyrie and Deion Waiters. One of those two, I think, has to go. I think Kyrie wants to go. Deion is sort of, you know, content with being there. But I don't see both of those guys working together. And I don't see Kyrie long-term being a Cav.
No, I could definitely see him eventually moving on to greener pastures. But before we leave the NBA, as I mentioned, the Spurs are up, you know, by a sizable margin. But, you know, it's the NBA. Teams go on runs. But, you know, they're currently up 2-1. If they win this game and they go up 3-1, do you see any way, Marcus, and I know you're a betting man, do you see any way that the champs can get up off the canvas and get this ring?
Yeah, they haven't been in the situation in the finals, but they were in the situation versus Boston a few years ago, where the last time they lost back-to-back games in the playoffs was against the Boston Celtics, and then they fell down 3-1 and rallied. I still think that if they lose tonight and go down 3-1, that it's going to go 7. I don't think they're going to win Game 7, though. But I think they would, you know, definitely show up in Game 5, and then that would force the Game 6 back to Miami and then going back to San Antonio. So I think that's where the new playoff format change comes in handy for basketball fans, because last season it was, 2-3-2. And it would have been going back to San Antonio for Game 6 and 7, and there's no way they would have beat San Antonio twice back-to-back on their home court. So,
No, I don't think so, not at all. But, you know, it is. The NBA is fantastic.
You got some feedback going on your mic, on your end.
That's Mario Chalmers trying to jam the signal. Is it better?
A little bit. Try now.
I said that might be Mario Chalmers trying to jam the signal.
There it is.
But as I mentioned, Marcus is a betting man, and that takes us to one of your favorite segments. You know, I could take it or leave it, but it is the Kings of Sport presenting Ask a Hockey Negro, Stanley Cup Finals in full effect. Marcus, are you enjoying this series so far?
I am, but I was expecting a better series from New York. We had two good games. Well, just three good games if you count game four as well. But I was, you know, I wanted this series to stretch out, and I shouldn't get too confident. It still might stretch out past game five. But, you know, I think the Kings were the better team coming in. I had the Kings winning in five, and it's shaping up to be that way if they can close out things on Friday. But it's been interesting to watch, and I'm not going to, you know, jinx the Kings or jinx myself here, but hopefully this time next week when we're doing the show, we'll, you know, the Kings will be the champs. But until then, we'll see what happens with the Rangers.
Yeah, I got to say, I've been surprised, not that the Kings are up, but the way that they've won these games, you know, not being trailing, you know, in regulation and coming back and having to, you know, win these games. And just, I don't know. You know, I don't know if they're just much like the Spurs and the Heat. Do they just have too much depth, too many weapons for this Rangers team, even if the Rangers have one of the best goalies on the face of the earth?
Yeah, they're probably, if not the deepest, one of the deepest teams in the league across the board. So, yeah, they just, you know, they can – and unlike basketball, you're constantly shifting guys in hockey. And when you have four solid lines of players that you can rotate in and out, especially this late in the season, then that's when it shows up. So, yeah, that's one of the major advantages the Kings has over New York.
Yeah, it's a classic New York-LA rivalry, which brings me to another point in our hockey segment for this week. As many of you have heard for the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about our good friends over at the Mr. Throwback Thursday podcast. And I do believe that there's been a wager between the New York and L.A. sides in this battle.
Yes. So the loser has to wear the gear of the other team and post it on their respective Facebook pages. So if the Kings lose, Alfred and I have to wear New York Rangers gear. And when the New York Rangers lose, Bill has to wear Los Angeles Kings gear.
So how did Jamie escape this?
I didn't include Jamie in there, but we can toss him in there. Yeah, you know, I let him off the hook, but we can. Because he's not the one. He's not the one who I see online, you know, giving the play-by-play on the Rangers. I just see Bill, so we can toss him in there.
You don't follow brother Jamie enough.
No, man. I don't.
Because he will. Like he's not as vocal as Bill, but yeah, he'll. You know when the Rangers are on.
Okay. Jamie, you can come get some too.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Part of me wishes that the Kings would lose, just because, you know, anytime Alfred has to eat some humble pie, it's a good day. But you know, I gotta stick with the home team, stick with the show, and root on these Kings, because you know, we gotta show these New York boys what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, ironically, you're from the South, though, you don't like New York.
I was gonna say, I'm not a fan of New York anyway. But ironically, you used to be a New Yorker.
Yes, 5 years I was a New Yorker. Was never a Rangers guy.
I was gonna say, did you root for the Rangers back then?
No, I had more of a special place for the Islanders because I went to school right across the street from Nassau Coliseum. So if there's any team in New York I would root for in the playoffs, it'd be the Islanders.
And the arena was adjacent to a Popeye's chicken?
Got a Popeye's, you had a Kennedy Fried Chicken, we had KFC. Yeah, it was if you've never been to Hempstead, Uniondale area, it's very hood. Don't let the Long Island persona fool you. It's very real in the streets of Long Island.
The struggle is real out there.
It is, certain parts.
Something else that is real to end off the A block, to end off segment one, it's something that most of the world is talking about. I could care less about it, Marcus. I wanted to get your opinion on it. The 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil is kicked off, and I guess Brazil won the opening round matchup 3-1 over Croatia. Are you a soccer fan, and are you hyped for the World Cup, man?
I'm not a soccer fan. Soccer is one of those sports, like, there's only so many hours in the day and week that I can watch sports, and soccer has never made the cut. Even hockey, to be honest, in terms of regular season, it's hard to make the cut because it's during basketball season. But soccer is low on that list. And every August, I tell myself, yeah, I'm going to get into the premiership and follow. But, you know, because the matches come on out here at either 4:30 or 7 a.m., it's just tough. So, not a soccer guy. Not really interested in the World Cup. I did watch the match today. It was a good match. But, you know, here's my thing. I can't stand the fake fill-in-the-blank fans, whether it's hockey during the Olympics or soccer during the World Cup. And especially when the USA is involved, it just becomes unbearable. So I'm hoping for an early exit for America just for that very reason.
Marcus, anti-American Vanderberg.
You know it's real. can you imagine if they get out the group of death and then we have to listen to fake soccer fan try to, you know, tell us who's on the team and what's going wrong. It's like, come on, dude, you don't follow soccer. It's okay. Just don't pretend.
Yeah, not only fake soccer fan, I don't want to hear from Jurgen Klinsmann coming out here running his mouth talking about Kobe Bryant and overpaid American athletes.
Yeah.
I'm already sick of this dude.
Hey, I mean, I respected his whole thing about, yeah, we're not going to win the World Cup. I mean, that's being truthful. They're not going to win the World Cup. So I respect that. Instead of him saying, oh, yeah, we have a great shot. No, you don't. So
I'll tell you, there's only been two times in my life that I've been interested in the World Cup, and they were both in the 90s. One was in 94 when it was in America,
mm-hmm.
because I was on a church trip with my church choir, and we were in New York City, and it was just like electric with, you know, all the ethnicities and nationalities and, you know, the soccer fans. Like, that was pretty cool. Like, I enjoyed that aspect of it. And then in 1998 for the World Cup in France. And the only reason I was hyped about that was Ricky Martin. Because they would run those promos much like they do now with Pitbull in the NBA playoffs. But this was Ricky Martin during the World Cup. You would get those promos at every commercial break. And he's coming out here, do you really want it? And after about 1,700 times seeing those commercials, I was like, you know what, Ricky? I kind of do. Let's watch some soccer.
I had that CD.
The Cup of Life CD.
Yep. Oh, there was your mic again.
The Cup of Life. Ricky Martin. Is my mic back?
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we got to figure out what's going on with this mic. I'm going to go listen to some Ricky Martin. Matter of fact, I think we might have to leave this in this segment going out on some Ricky Martin.
All right.
In honor of Marcus Vanderberg buying the Cup of Life CD. How old were you in 98?
15. I remember that summer well.
15-year-old young man buying a Ricky Martin Cup of Life CD to celebrate the World Cup.
What else was hot in 98? That Madonna track from Austin Powers. What was that song?
Beautiful Stranger.
Yep. That was 15. Those are the two that popped in my head for some reason. I'm sure I was listening to a lot more music than Ricky Martin and Madonna at 15, but for some reason those two stand out.
Is this something you need to tell us tonight, Brother Vanderberg?
Nope. Is that a diverse playlist here?
Hey, that's it. Diverse playlist.
That came out in 99, excuse me, that album.
The Madonna album?
The self-titled album with Living La Vida Loca and...
Because he had a lot of singles on that record that was already out.
Yeah, the Cup of Life was not, yeah, so that came out on that CD as well.
They just tacked the Cup of Life on to Living La Vida Loca.
Yeah.
As Chris Rock would tell you, it was like the Puerto Rican whoops, there it is.
shake your bonbon. Oh, boy.
Ricky Martin had about, there was about five singles off of that CD, though. Like, Rick, that CD was
She's
like,
All oh. Ever Had.
Yeah. She Bang, was that on there?
That might have been the Nets album. Yeah. Yeah. High school. Yeah,
Ricky Martin was hot for about like 5 years. He had a good little run.
And now he's, I don't know what he's doing. I know he's raising some kids, I think, but I don't know besides that.
Yeah, I've watched the Ricky Martin Behind the Music one night, and it was very emotional.
It had to be sad.
It was sad, then it was happy when Ricky finally came out the closet and got to be with his lover, and his sister was his manager or something, and all the Menudo boys was like congratulating him, and you could see the happiness on Ricky's face.
And the funny thing is, no one cared when he came out.
No, yeah, it wasn't a big deal at all.
No.
And that was, what was that, like, he came out, what, almost 10 years ago now?
Yeah, because he was dating that chick for a long time. And so was after that, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, good for you, Ricky Martin.
Oh, no, 2010.
It's been that recent?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody knew that. That was not a well-kept secret.
No. I look forward to the Ryan Seacrest announcement someday.
Someday.
Yeah.
But you know what I look forward to? And it's no secret. Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham will be joining us, rejoining the show for the Ringside Rap coming up next. As well, we have a very special guest. So if you want to know who that is, you got to stick around. And Marcus and I are going to listen to some Ricky Martin. And we'll be back in like a minute or so. More Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. And you know what time it is. Each and every week we bring you our opinions, our takes on the world of professional wrestling. Marcus and the Godfather. No Big Nasty though this week, man.
Yeah, this is, we have to have a talk with him. He's got a bunch of no-shows. He's like Shawn Michaels. He's just, you know, not showing up to events. He has to forfeit the title. So maybe he lost his smile, maybe. Yeah. Oh,
there it is. But in Alfred's absence, we do have a guest to fill in, and more than fill in the shoes of Big Nasty. Not only is she a co-host of the Fangirl Podcast.
Wait,
not
you said a, she. You said, wait. This isn't a guys-only club?
Did I bury the lead?
I think you did.
The glass ceiling has been broken. I can hear shouts of hallelujah from the, all the women listeners and from TJ McClune out there in Texas.
Nah, he still can't come back.
greatest swerve in the history of swerves. But yes, she is the co-host of the Fangirl Podcast, and she is a writer for Ring Bells and Ring Sirens, friend of the program, friend of the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Sierra Reed. What's up, Sierra?
Hello. I guess I'm the China of the equation, you know? I beat up girls and guys.
That's your words, not mine, but sure.
I was going to say, yeah, it depends on where, what stage of the career are we talking?
I'm talking before the nose surgery, yeah.
Okay.
Good.
There.
Oh, man, it is great to have you on the show. Before we get into the news and notes of the week, just kind of give the listeners out there a little bit of background on yourself and, you know, just how you came to be a fan of this wild and wacky sport that we call professional wrestling.
Well, for starters, I've been into this whole podcasting thing for 4 years. I started out on Angry Marks, which is my home, and I recently just departed from there after 4 years. They got me my start and dealt with all my bullshit for 4 years. And eventually I got involved with Ring Sirens, their magazine. I was writing for them. And then I got involved with Ring Bells, which I'm still with today. And I came across you guys. I believe a fan tweeted me your podcast. And I said, let me check this out because I listen to a ton. And I wanted some new podcasts to keep busy with every week. And being that I'm a connoisseur of them, I continue to listen to you guys. And I was just like, oh, God, who are these wacky guys to talk about sports and wrestling? And I'm not, like, the biggest sports junkie, but, hey, I enjoy it. So I've been a fan ever since.
Very cool.
Look at that. Look at that, Marcus. We're winning people over, influencing friends and winning people.
It's always very weird when people say, yeah, they listen to the podcast because it's just like, oh, really? Like, I don't know. I just feel like we're doing the show just for us, and then it goes out there. But it's always good to hear when people, you know, say they listen. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, I understand. I've been in that same spot all the time because sometimes I didn't realize people were listening to me. And then when I got Twitter, they're like, oh, I listen every. I'm like, are you sure? Why are you listening to me? Because sometimes I don't even want to listen to myself. So I feel bad for those that listen to me. So, I mean, I like it. So you guys are probably like, oh, God, they're listening to us. But, hey, eventually it becomes like, yay, they're actually listening, you know. And it grows even more and crazier. I don't know. But it's kind of funny because I'm so used to being like, how would you say, like the last maybe year or so, I've been more so writing aspect as opposed to podcasts mostly. And then when fans are telling me like, oh, I'm listening to the show that I do with Sloan, it's like, wait, how did you guys know I'm doing a show with Sloan? It's crazy, so.
And the show is definitely crazy.
There goes your mic again.
I don't know what it is with this mic. I might have to release this mic after this week.
Oh no!
Send it out there on the pavement with JTG.
It'll have some company.
Well, let's start right there. Speaking of releases and future endeavors, not a good day if you were a mid-carder or a jobber or somebody that is just collecting a paycheck for the WWE, because there were a handful of releases. Marcus, you got the list. Some prominent names among them.
I do. First off, JTG.
After 7 years.
7 years. JTG.
Brooklyn.
No longer employed. He's been released for the second time.
And I think that release was just like somebody was just like the accountant was going through the files. They're like, damn, JTG is still on the books?
Yeah.
We gotta get rid of this guy.
You know, the hilarious thing is, like, I talked about this with Sloan earlier, and she was saying about, I feel like Twitter is responsible for him being fired. Because when they were releasing all these names of people getting fired, a couple of fans were like, wait, JTG still has a job? And she's like, a few hours later, JTG has been released from his contract. It's like, what?
Yeah, there was even a website up, wasn't it, Marcus? Like, how long has JTG been employed?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I shared the JTG story on the show that I met him last year at the SummerSlam party. And I will say this. He had a bunch of creative ideas, but I don't know if he went about them in the right way in terms of pitching them to Vince McMahon. So he was always thinking. He had a bunch of ideas that he was throwing out there. And he was pretty open about his lack of TV time, and you know, he was trying to stay positive. But yeah, it just I mean, that was a year ago, and he hasn't been on TV since last August at least. So
last time I remember seeing JTG was one of the Ryback squashes, and that was about,
and he had a perm. Yeah, I was like, oh, JTG hairs.
Like Cat Williams on the juice.
Yeah. Drew McIntyre, former Vince McMahon guy, go on.
Well, yeah, didn't Vince say he was going to be the future of the company?
Yeah.
The chosen one.
That didn't work. He had a cool entrance, but yeah, after that, it was he was pretty vanilla.
But, you know, I saw this also on Twitter. Some fans were saying that, I don't know how much of this is true, but some people were saying that possibly that whole incident he had with his ex-wife, Tiffany, who's now Taryn Terrell, that kind of dampened, how would you say, how he looked in Vince McMahon's eyes. Like, ever since then, he's just been falling. And I'm like, no, he wasn't doing that great before then either. So I just think they didn't know what to do with this guy, period. Like, it was one of those cases, they brought this guy up so fast from developmental, and they had no clue what to do with him. That whole chosen one thing went but so far, you know. And it's sad. It sucks. All 3MB is just, it's looking like Destiny's Child now.
Yes. You know, I was going to say 3MB is probably, even though they were a comedy act and you know, nothing special, it was actually a solid spot for him and Jinder Mahal, who also got released.
Yeah, Jinder's on the list. I mean, they finally hit their stride. I felt the last few months, I feel like they finally, you know, figured out what to do with them, and they added Hornswoggle.
Like, they had the gimmick where it was like every week they would come out as a band that was like representing the town they were in. Like, that was a pretty cool little gimmick.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate. Jinder Mahal, Atana, who should have been released once she delivered that knee to Naomi.
I disagree.
What?
I disagree.
You're an Asana fan?
Defender.
Look, she's my homegirl, okay? Let's just say somebody gets smarts with her, I'm, you know, I might claw their eyes out. Let's just put it that way, okay? I got her back, okay? Now, what she did to Naomi, that was fucked up. I was even like, girl, you could have really blinded this chick.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of found this kind of strange. Rosa Mendez is part of Total Divas now.
Well, it helps to sleep with, allegedly.
Oh, apparently that ain't allegedly. I heard that's true.
Listen,
we've had issues with them. We're going to say allegedly, reportedly, and all the other safe words so we don't hear from the Federation. Yeah, it helps when you're reportedly linked to someone in the back like Michael Hayes to get some TV time.
Yeah.
Well, true, but when the hilarious thing is, like, if you go to cagematch.net and you look at, like, everybody's, like, matches in the past year or whatever, and you see the Exotas had more appearances than Rosa Mendez and a couple other chicks in the company on television, and Rosa Mendez has only had one so far this year. It's just like, wow.
Yeah, I know she showed up on that one Raw right before WrestleMania, and Jerry Lawler didn't even recognize her.
Yeah, he's like, Rosa Mendez? He didn't even know what was going on. But, yeah, poor Exana. Does anybody see her involved in the indies?
No.
No.
Oh, exactly. I don't
think. Because she's got a good character, but she can't wrestle.
No, I don't see her continuing this, no.
If she couldn't get on as the Lana character for Rusev, then, you know, I think that was.
Oh, that's
Lana's great, but that's clearly a fake accent she's got going on.
So Oksana was the original portrayer of Lana?
No, I'm saying if they consider her for that role.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah. I see where you're going. Yeah,
that was the writing on the wall for her.
That is true, and I'm sure the knee to the eye didn't help matters either.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, like a couple months ago, there was a story coming out that Triple H was high on Axana and wanted to do something with her, and then you see her get released. It's like, oh, I guess that didn't last long.
He was high on Sin Cara too.
Yeah.
We see where that dude is now.
You know, Hunico.
Kurt Hawkins on the list.
Kurt Hawkins, who got into some Twitter beef, I guess.
Yeah, so he called out Mark Henry's celebrating a birthday, and he I think he might be celebrating also just when he started with the company 18 years ago. And he tweeted out a photo of himself, and Hawkins pretty much responded and said, hey, you know, a bunch of your colleagues are losing jobs today, and this is what you're tweeting out. And Martin responded and said, hey, it's a small world. I know you live, and an apology is due. So be careful, Kurt.
So basically, at the same time, Mark Henry is thinking the same thing as I am, as what the fuck does that have to do with me celebrating 18 years this August?
Yeah.
Like, you're getting fired. How many other people have been fired over the past 18 years and I still have a job? Yeah, like, don't come for Ricky Rose, bro.
That's pretty remarkable. Like, if you think about it, all of the crap and all the bad gimmicks Mark Henry's endured, that, you know, he's been there this long.
That's what I love about other than taking Kane.
Oh, no. Get your mic.
You said my mic is my mic can go make it 18 years,
yeah, or 18 minutes. Yeah.
It was working fine. You know.
There you go.
Okay, there we go. I just have to like sit in this one position.
Yeah, don't move.
Don't move.
Yeah, it must be a short. Speaking of Twitter, the tweet of the day about the releases was from Trent Beretta, who said, "quote It should have been Kofi." So.
Okay.
Kofi, but
why are they getting at the brothers on their release day? Leave the brothers out of this. Come on now.
Yeah, there was another brother on the list that hurt me. That hurt my heart.
Theodore Lawn.
Damn.
I mean, his suits have been released from the company.
We were just talking about Teddy Long, like what, 3 weeks ago?
When we were doing the Black WCW Legends House,
Black WCW Legends House. So we were like, Teddy hadn't been on TV in almost a year,
over a year.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, apparently his contract was up, and people knew he was planning on leaving anyways. But when I read that, I said, Teddy Long leaving? I just couldn't think that that'd be possible. He's been there so long.
Yeah,
99. Yeah. And, I mean, he wasn't general manager or nothing anymore, so that's when I kind of figured, okay, they've gotten tired of this. No more you running SmackDown.
Yeah, that's a guy that, you know, just for the network's sake, though, like, you always need people to talking heads for those documentaries, mm-hmm. for the countdown shows. And it's like you said, dude's been there since 99. You know, I'm sure he has input to add on various matches or various superstars. You know, you could have got a lot of mileage out of Teddy, and they very well may.
They still will probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But just, you know, just in a different capacity. But yeah, Teddy to me, you know, when you got those guys that were witnesses to history, even if they weren't the biggest household names, you know, that's a good asset to have for your company.
And he's one of the few WCW guys that are still left. You know, Tim, Booker, who's left? I mean, Jericho's off and on, but there's not a lot of those guys still floating around, especially if you try to promote this whole WCW Monday Night War thing.
DDP?
Yeah, but he's not really a full-time.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I mean, Teddy Long will be in that status where they can call him up and have him, you know, come do stuff, but he's not getting a full-time check for sitting at home.
No. And maybe it also has to do with his age. He kind of probably got tired of the constant rote running and just wanted to go home and be with the family.
Maybe he got mad when that Oksana got released. He's like, you can't cut my boo like that.
He wasn't having that.
He pulled a Jerry Lawler.
Oh, boy.
And I seen memes on Twitter of people posting pics of Teddy Long getting the news by his release was the pictures from his wedding to Crystal Marshall where he had the heart attack. He's just laying there. He's just so distraught. I'm like, come on, people. Why we gotta bring that back up? Come on.
I forgot all about that. That was like one of my favorite wrestling weddings because you had Butch Reed and Ron Simmons were like the best man.
Yeah, and no one had seen Butch Reed for how long since before that? It was like, wait, Butch Reed?
Any other notable names on that list on the chopping block?
With Camacho, Brodus Clay.
Yeah, Brodus Clay. On the list.
Yeah. This is sad.
Do you guys think that he didn't get a proper chance?
Oh, no, he was screwed from the start. Yeah. That whole gimmick he had, there was no way he was going to recover from that.
You know, when I seen he got cut, I'm like, I kind of could have seen this coming a couple months ago. Because, as I was telling Sloan, they kind of basically took his gimmick. They gave it the, Tensai, then now he's doing commentary. Yeah. And then they gave his music and everything to the girls. And then they brought in Xavier Woods, and he was using his music and everything. And I'm just like, yeah, you guys passed his entire gimmick off onto this guy, and it's not working for that guy at all.
Yeah, I hated the gimmick from the start, and, well, the shucking and jiving. Like, what Rusev is what Brodus Clay should have been.
Yeah.
Just a quiet guy that had a mouthpiece, and he just went out there and destroyed people. But no.
Well, minus the race aspect of it.
Racial aspect.
Yeah.
Shoot, they could have put him and Teddy Long together.
Yeah, he could have brought back the white boy challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Let's not.
The great moments in wrestling history.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's such a waste of a guy. That, like, Brodus Clay was the greatest tactician in the ring or the best technical wrestler. But when you got a guy that size with that, he obviously had personality. And it's like, this is the best you can come up with, him and Tensai as these dancing idiots. It's a real waste of what his most famous moment was that WrestleMania where he came out with the dancing mamas, which makes me cringe every time I see it.
Well, I mean, for him, I think it's they didn't really know what to do with him because they had repackaged him. They had brought him up once as, basically a powerhouse. And then they took him back down developmental. They repackaged him with this whole gimmick. And apparently he decided to go back to developmental when they lifted his old gimmick. And he was just like, I'm going to go back to NXT and train. And apparently today they said, nah. No more free divs, brother. You out of here. It's a shame because he wasn't that bad in the ring, but they just couldn't figure out what to do with this guy.
He did sign with Pro Wrestling Syndicate, so he will be on the indie scene. Him and Hawkins will both be.
Yeah, talk about getting hired fast.
Yeah.
Well, he's a guy that would have had a job regardless, though. I think, somebody that size would have gotten another look from somebody.
Of course, TNA.
Yeah, not all right. TNA would have picked him up. Evan Bourne, Yoshitatsu.
Oh.
Also round up the list. And Mark Harris, the referee.
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know you, Mark.
Evan Bourne, not a surprise. Yoshitatsu, not a surprise at all. Last time I saw Yoshitatsu was like SmackDown versus Raw 2010 on the video game.
Yeah, I could see Evan going ROH for sure if he's healthy. Yoshi, I don't know what he's going to do.
I bet you Evan Bourne is booked by RRH right now. He's just not telling anybody.
Yeah.
I bet he is. He's going to be on, the newest, Pro Wrestling Syndicate show and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. He's going to be all around the indies within, the next month.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has a non-compete, but it wouldn't surprise me if he showed up to the pay-per-view, but I'm sure he can't, probably.
I don't know if they got a clause for some of these guys. I think with M. Bourne, I don't think he has a clause since he's been so gone for, what, maybe but 2 years at the most or longer? He's been on television for a while.
Yeah, it's been at least 2 years. I'm trying to think of the last guy who was cut and then showed up right away somewhere, but it's been a while.
Would that have been a Hero?
Yeah.
No, and I think that's part of the reason why Brodus can't wrestle until September for Syndicate, because it's got to be like a 90-day compete.
Plus. Well, I mean, Brodus was still doing like TV things, but I mean, like Evan Bourne, he was gone for so long. I'm sure they had to like revise his contract over the past couple years. The last time I seen him on television was when him and Kofi Kingston were tag team champions.
Airborne.
And look how that turned out.
And ironically, it wasn't the Jamaican that got caught with the weed.
Nope.
The synthetic weed.
Yeah. Talk about that.
And didn't he snitch on R-Truth? Wasn't that part of it, too?
Yeah, he was born.
Yeah, he should have got cut for snitching.
Oh, we're just going to bring the stop snitching thing to WWE now?
Just saying. Just because you go down don't mean I have to go down, brother.
Okay, Cameron.
Like, there's only been so many spots on this roster.
Stop snitching. That'd probably be R-Truth's new gimmick. Stop snitching. You know.
I'm surprised. Actually, I'm surprised you're still employed.
Oh, Truth? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is about R-Truth, but it seems like anywhere he goes, he has a long tenure. It's like, come
that
on.
That entrance is over, though. Like when I was at that show in Hampton a while back, the kids, like, respond to that entrance.
But when's the last time you've seen the entrance on TV?
You never see it on TV, but I think in the arena, I don't know if he does well at the merch table or whatnot, but, like, that
entrance ain't got no merch. What R2 merch? He got a do-rag?
He got a do-rag. He got the Pretty Ricky shirt.
Maybe he has a mixtape.
You know what I saw the other day that made me really sad? I watched somebody sent me an old clip of a R-Truth from, what was it, 2 years ago, when him and Cena were feuding.
Oh, we smoking cigarettes? The Newports?
Such a waste, man. Like, this guy was so good in that role.
And then you look at R-Truth on TV now, and you don't even believe that this happened 2 years ago? Because he's just so happy and go lucky.
Yeah. Like, what happened to all the little Jimmy stuff, and you gonna get got? Hitting people with water bottles.
Yeah. Poor John Morrison. He had to suffer that.
Well, he had to suffer for something else.
But hey.
His associations.
But hey, he still looks great in hot pants. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I did want to ask you, though. Somebody that wasn't released. But I know your fangirl heart might have been broken that night. What are your thoughts on Seth Rollins?
The fact that I was expecting either Roman Reigns or Dean Ambrose to be the ones to turn, and it was the guy with the Caitlyn hair. Yeah, I kind of like the swerve. It's different. And he's the peacemaker of the three. The peacemaker has had enough. He wants to move on. I don't know. Some fans felt like they shouldn't have done this. And then the funny part about it was the crazy memes I've seen on Twitter and Tumblr. Basically, Seth Rollins is a thought now. Apparently. He's a hoe.
He's a hoe.
Yeah, apparently. According to Twitter, he's a hoe. He's not loyal. And I just like this, you know,
the
swerve.
We all know these hoes ain't loyal. I mean, that is a fact. It's on the record.
Hey, some of us, but not everybody. I'm just saying, but I don't know. I just don't know where they're going to go with this. Because how many times do we have stables break up and then they had the disgruntled guy turn on the other ones and the other ones are so shocked. And we have that program and then after a while, you don't see any of them.
I think what we've seen like so far, Marcus, is that Roman Reigns as, you know, the raw talent that he has, he's not ready for that main event push, not yet.
Not if he's required to speed by himself. No, I mean, I think he can do the wrestling thing by himself, you know. But who would be a mouthpiece for Roman Reigns at this point? Not like you can call The Rock up and say, "Hey, you know, come speed for the family." But I am sort of indifferent about the whole Shield thing. I did like the surprise element of the split, but after that, I'm sort of indifferent to what they do now.
You see Rollins getting involved in the title picture?
No, I don't think so. I think he'll be involved with one of the guys in the Shield that's left. I'm still waiting for Ambrose to turn on Roman Reigns.
Ambrose has to turn.
Yeah.
And then maybe we eventually get that three-way that was proposed for WrestleMania.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Possibly, but I think everybody is so hard on Ambrose turning because he has that whole heel character about him. He just has that swag. You just don't see babyface material, but what if we get swerved again and it's Roman Reigns? Then what are we going to do?
Oh, I don't know if Roman would work.
That's called TNA.
But hey, you know, with Roman, here's the thing. You turn him heel, he doesn't have to talk.
But who would he be going against Ambrose? The two of them would be going against Ambrose? That's, you know.
How would you say, like, they would go against him, but they're not actually as a group. They're just doing their own bidding.
So Reigns would still have beef with Triple H despite turning on Ambrose?
Nah, Triple H would probably pay him or something. Like, I don't know how they would really go about that, but it just seems like something else is up.
I think if you're going to do that, then Reigns should have been the one to turn instead of Rollins. Because I could see him fitting in with that group more and Triple H doing the talking for him.
Well, I think they more so didn't want to go with the predictable. Like, they kind of want to go with that whole, like, oh my gosh, let's shock the fans thing. And they kind of did. That would
have been a shock. That would have been a shock if Reigns aligned with the Shield.
With Evolution?
Yeah, I'm sorry. With Evolution, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, I mean, with him, when you kind of look at Reigns, you kind of could see him being an Evolution.
I mean, yeah, basically he's just the younger Batista without the skinny jeans.
You know, or
Nash. He's Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
With better knees.
Yeah.
But looks better than Kevin Nash. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm going to say. But he looks like he belongs in that group because he has the size. Yeah. You know, he's intimidating. And that was kind of one of the things that got Batista over at first was how he looked. So that would be so predictable. And then, of course, you had the IWC. Oh, we knew this was coming. So they go with Seth Rollins. And it's like, what did they see in this guy? But apparently he's not really in Evolution. They're not going to go with that. I don't know why they would twist it that way.
I did like the promo from Raw this past week, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think, you know, to me, Rollins is, and this is not a slight on him, but to me, he reminds me of a poor man CM Punk, which is still pretty good.
Are you saying that they actually resemble each other, which they've always have?
Stop moving. Oh. Stop, go back to that position. You moved.
This is one of those nights, Marcus.
You better go there. Amazon.com, Link. You better buy yourself a mic. We'll get like 50 cents off that purchase.
Hey, that's a hustle, man. That's a hustle. We just start buying our own stuff.
Yeah.
But real quick on the Money in the Bank, Marcus and I were talking before the show. There's a lot of different ways they could go now that they've taken the title off of Daniel Bryan. Marcus and I are kind of leaning towards either Bray Wyatt or Antonio Cesaro walking out of there with the title. What are your thoughts on Money in the Bank? And, you know, do you think that, you know, since they've stripped him of the title, we don't see Bryan again until, you know, maybe SummerSlam?
You know, the whole stripping of the title thing, I didn't find that shocking. I felt like they were going to go that route anyway for just something to sell Money in the Bank. And with his injury, you don't know when he's going to be able to return at all. So being that you had to defend the title within 30 days, he was going to go past
allegedly,
that. Allegedly. If that's still a rule in that company.
Jack Tunney rules.
This Jack Tunney.
Yeah. And, you know, back then he would have been stripped of the title a long time ago. But I don't know. With Cesaro, I kind of feel like there's this bandwagon for him lately that I've seen a lot of fans that were rooting for Daniel Bryan have lost faith in him because of the push. And I've always said this, if your first title program is against Kane, you're going to be fucked. So you're not going to go up. You're just going to go down. So I see a lot of these fans jumping on the Cesaro train and saying he needs to be the next champion. And a lot of them are getting behind him, which is great and all, but I don't see him touching that title soon. Maybe he'd be like one of the guys that climbs up the ladder and somebody else yanks it. But I don't see them going that far as giving him the belt. If they do, I don't know where they're going to go with this situation, because here's the problem. Cesaro is a client of Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman also has Brock Lesnar as his client.
There's your angle. It writes itself.
Yeah, but is that even going to be... Is anybody going to even be intrigued by that? Like, do we really want to see him try to swing Brock Lesnar?
Yes.
Do we really want to see Brock Lesnar try the Shooting Star Press?
No.
No. Do we even want to see a sloppy F5? No. I just don't know if they go with that program so fast, and especially with SummerSlam coming up, they're going to have something if Daniel Bryan is around by then to sell that with him. And maybe they make that as a match, Cesaro and Daniel Bryan. But with Bray Wyatt, I had this conversation with Slim. We really touched on this. The Wyatts are supposed to be detached from everything. So giving them the belt would do what? That wouldn't make sense to me. They're supposed to be into manipulating your mind and basically just messing with your whole being of a person. They shouldn't care about a title. You know?
I think there's ways around it. You know, he could... You know, I think Bray's biggest strength, obviously, is his promo ability. And I think he could spin it to, you know, the ultimate way to control people is by having power, and the ultimate power is the title. And you could spin it that way. As far as Cesaro and Brock goes, I think I'd be interested in that program. I do think it's a little quick to pull the trigger on that, though. But, I mean, anybody in this situation, I think, is kind of quick, Marcus, other than Cena. And I don't want to see him go back to Cena this quickly.
Yeah, I mean, Cena's the safe choice. And he's a better choice than Orton.
Yeah.
Or Del Rio, who are former champions. I would like to see the Cesaro thing. I think they would have enough time if they did it at Money in the Bank. That gives them 6+ weeks to get Lesnar in the mix. And I think it would be a great match, those two. And if, you know, I think we saw shades of what Cesaro can do as a babyface when he won at Mania. And if he, you know, if he does the split and does the spin to Heyman, I think that automatically will make him a baby face in the eyes of the fans. And my only issue is I don't think he should be beating Lesnar. And in that case, if Lesnar wins the title, what do you do with that? Because he's not going to be around. So that's my only thing.
In the same situation that you are right now with Bryan, you know, with a champion that's not around.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I did see that they were trying to work Lesnar at Night of Champions, because that's when the first wave of subscriptions are going to end for the network. So they're trying to find a way to get Lesnar to work additional dates. So in that case, it would make sense if Lesnar won, but I think the match could work. And the problem is if Daniel Bryan comes back for SummerSlam, you still have to find something to do with Lesnar. And I don't know who else is out there for Lesnar besides Cesaro, if you factor in the whole manager relationship.
A man called Sting.
Like I said, I don't know who else is out there. he would destroy Sting by accident, because I wouldn't trust Lesnar in the ring.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either.
I have to agree with you on that one. No Sting, please. I just don't, in 2014, to see Sting fighting anybody, let alone somebody I know could just destroy him by looking at him. I just don't want to see that. Give Sting like The Miz or something. Just let them be on the pre-show. Like, I just don't want to see Sting on a pay-per-view in 2014. I don't. I just don't. And Brock Lesnar, here's the thing, you know, no one knows, like, when's he coming back? When's he going to leave? When he's going to come back? It's, that's the sticky situation. So it's kind of like, do you actually even go forth having a title program with him? Because of the constant walking in and walking out. I mean, the last couple times he's came in, they did kind of well with him, but are the fans going to be continuing to sit around and wait for him? You know,
well, that's why I think he would have to wrestle the next pay-per-view if he was.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Title.
Like, because I mean, it looks like they're going to build towards possibly Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar at some point, if that happens. But just getting there, just looking at it, it's just like, how are we going to actually get there? Because they're still every week having Paul Heyman remind us that Lesnar defeated The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which is great. He's reminding us that Brock Lesnar is still around at some point. But how long are they going to hang on to that? And no one's seen or heard anything from The Undertaker. So you've got so many variables going into this. And another guy, you guys didn't even touch on him. What about Sheamus, yo?
Yeah, that's my thoughts.
I mean, you guys don't see that Sheamus can potentially be the winner?
No.
No.
Not at all.
No.
I mean, I kind of have like a theory about this. Like, maybe they do this kind of the wait and, you know, switch thing in case Daniel Bryan can't come back for a while. Why not have your heel champion in that time? And then that makes Daniel Bryan angry and want to come back to fighting babyface. Why not have Sheamus? And plus, he's friends with Triple H. That's their champion. John Cena doesn't want to join the Authority. He wants to go against them. That's going to get boring and old seeing them throw everybody at John Cena again, because we all know John Cena is going to win.
In that case, I'd rather have Orton win the title back if you're going to do that instead of Sheamus.
And that's another thing. Randy Orton, is he in the doghouse or something?
Why, because he wasn't on Raw?
No, it's just that, you know, since they saddled this whole Evolution Reunited thing, he's kind of faded into the background.
He's faded into the background for a while. Ever since you had Triple H and Stephanie come on screen, Orton has been, even when he was the champion, he was like the third wheel.
Which is kind of like, when you think about Randy Orton as a heel character, is really odd because he's always been at the forefront. So to see that he's kind of not really in the title picture, but he is in this match, it's a little strange. I don't see him winning this at all.
No, I don't think he can go back to Orton this quick.
No.
Or ever.
It didn't work the last time. The fans turned on it really badly. Boring Orton. That's what they would call him. So I don't know. I'm pulling for Sheamus in this one.
You are alone on that limb.
Yeah.
Much look, like you are alone when you say you don't want to see Sting in 2014, because everybody wants to see that man called Sting.
I'm not alone. Sloan's with me.
I don't want to see him wrestle at this point. I do want to see him, though.
I don't. Why? The halfway painted on face paint? Yeah, I ain't got time for that. Him as the Joker? Sting? What? No.
So did you enjoy your one and only appearance on this show, Sarah? How dare you talk about Sting like that?
Surfing Sting? No, I don't have time for that. Because I love Sting. I really do. But he's been involved in a lot of bullshit. He has. RoboCop.
Hey, RoboCop is a fine protector of the city of Detroit.
Wasn't he involved in the whole Shockmaster thing? Yeah.
By default, he was one of many.
He introduced him. Okay,
everybody was stained with that.
That's like blaming Flair for that. Flair was associated with that.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
It was his show.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Ric Flair knew something was going to go wrong. And he was the only one corpsing the whole time, okay? He knew this is not going to work. Okay? What else was Sting involved in that was bad? The whole thing.
TNA?
TNA. Vampiro.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when he got burned? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't forget that one. That was horrible. Yeah. The time he was red and black Sting, and all of a sudden he's white and black the next week? Yeah.
Well, this is all Russo. Well, he wasn't writing this stuff.
Yeah, Sting wasn't a writer. He didn't write a match with him and Rick Steiner where dogs attacked him.
He's going to the Hall of Fame at some point, and he'll have one run-in with Hogan in the back, and they'll allude to some WCW match, and that'll
he's
be
gotta,
it.
He's got
to
have one match, though.
No, I don't think so.
Like somebody, like Heath Slater, it would have been Taker. Miz or somebody.
I don't know.
But who would you put him against? That's the thing. But Sting, you know, you got a lot of younger fans in that WWE audience that don't really know who he was. Because when WCW died, they were just boring. You know, with Sting, who the hell are you going to put him with? They're not going to, some of those fans are not going to care. It's going to be kind of like how we just see with RVD. Lukewarm chance.
Sting and Bray Wyatt would be an interesting feud.
Okay.
Just from a promo standpoint.
Feud okay. is a stretch.
That's scary. What are we going to have? Bray Wyatt Tottenham in the dark and then Sting's up in the fucking
you
rafters?
Gotta, you got to think about it. Like, this whole feud that we just saw with John Cena, when you got this predictable baby face that people don't like, if you take Cena out and put Sting in that role as the guy that's the champion for the fans, and he's going against this guy that's brainwashing the people. I think Sting would have done a better job in that role than John Cena.
He's the fans don't know him. That's the problem. You have to spend all this time building him up, and then you want to give him.
In 1998, this would have worked.
Yeah.
Not in 2014.
It's still real to me, damn it. It's still real to me.
Yeah.
As he was saying this, I was like envisioning Sting on the back of a car, riding, waving at all the fans. Yeah, back in 1990 something. Not now. Those kids are going to probably just be like, Daddy, who's Sting? That's what's going to happen.
That's the problem with kids today.
Well, I mean, I can't blame them because here's the thing. Like, Sting, he had a choice. He could have came to that company years ago. A long time ago when it was still fresh. You know, whole invasion angle. He could have came then, and he, Scott Steiner, Kevin Nash, a lot of those big name guys in that company decided to sit home or not sign. So, if anything, he can blame himself. Because at that time, could anybody imagine at that time if they had for that SummerSlam, The Rock versus Sting? Sting versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Sting versus anybody in that company.
Damn, Nate. She's like the female Alfred. She's just carving it up.
Hey, I'm just saying. Sting is a national treasure.
I'm just saying, like,
respected and admired by all.
I mean, I understood the guy wanted to take time. He went and found God. I didn't know God was missing, but I just felt like there was such a boatload of things they could have did then, and he didn't want to. So now to see him want to come back, it's like, what are we going to do with you? All those big matches are gone now. Undertaker doesn't seem like he wants to come back, so that big match is pretty much out the window now. It's just going to look crazy.
Just at a point, Nate.
It's just going to look like, remember after the invasion, Ric Flair returned to the company and he started wrestling in the ring? And it just looks strange because Ric Flair is wrestling all these guys that are way younger than him. That's what it's going to look like. This old-ass dude out there with these young dudes. That's what it's going to look like.
I think my headset's cutting out. I couldn't hear that last portion of what you were saying.
That's what it's... I'm being serious. I love Sting. I mean, he could still go in a ring, but that's what it's going to run to, and those kids are going to think the same thing. I was a kid, and I used to think some of those things, like, gosh, this guy looks like he's about 80, and he's still wrestling. Yeah. That's just the reality of it. It's okay. You can put Undertaker versus Sting on 2K14. It's okay.
Well, that's what I want. I want Sting as an unlockable character next year.
I think you'll get on the game.
Give me something.
They announced some of the details this week at E3, but That's a good place for him. Video game.
What are they going to do? Like a, you know what they should do? Like a WCW mode. Like,
they should. Like that.
Like a story mode. I think that'd be great.
Like the other side of the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, like how they did with the Attitude Era, was it about 2 years ago? Where you had different characters, like have him, Hogan, maybe Kevin Nash, or like Rey Mysterio, like certain guys. I think that'd be cool.
It's still an untapped market. I know they got the Clash of Champions up.
You might. All right, let's move to TNA before your mic dies.
Yeah, let's hit some TNA real quick, because that's what everybody wants to talk about. Everybody wants to watch. Slammiversary is coming up. Impact is getting thrashed by the NBA Finals in the ratings. Quick update, the Spurs have defeated the Heat 107-86 and take a 3-1 lead. So there's a good chance that Sunday night, while Slammiversary is taking place, the NBA Finals could be concluding. I am a fan of TNA. I recognize their faults. But unlike some people in the world, Brian Alvarez being one of them, you know, I can watch Impact. It doesn't send me into fits of terror. It doesn't make me want to quit my job. Where do you come in at, on TNA, Sierra? Are you a fan of the product? Do you think there's some positives in this company? Or are you like Marcus and Brian Alvarez and people of that ilk?
You know, they have a decent roster. They have good guys on there that are capable of wrestling. And it's just kind of like one of the situations of they need to be in the right spot. You know, and sometimes they take guys and they keep pushing them until the point where it's like, okay, everybody else is left. Why haven't you guys got this? And there's times where they take guys and they milk it way too long. Like, for instance, when they brought Bobby Lashley in years ago. Yeah, that went well. Or that time Rikishi showed up at the end of Impact. Yeah. See what I mean? So I kind of stopped watching the guys' matches and just stayed paying attention to the knockouts because I cover women's wrestling. But lately, the knockouts have been giving me nothing, really. I don't like the stalker angle. Gail Kim is a babyface after being a, you know, the big heel after all this time. It's kind of looking like the knockouts title picture from 2009 again.
You mentioned good wrestlers, and the reason why I don't watch is if I want to watch good wrestlers, I'll watch ROH because they actually have the time to wrestle. My biggest beef with TNA besides the storylines was I would watch, and I would sit through 30 and 40 minutes of talking before they would get to a match, and the match would be like 3 minutes, and that was it. So, yeah, they might have talent on the roster, but if the talent is not allowed to wrestle for prolonged periods on TV, then what good is the talent?
True, but at the same time, I can't blame them for the decisions by the company or, you know, Spike TV. And
I don't hold that against the talent, but, you know, in terms of if I want to watch pure wrestling, I'm going to watch ROH. I'm not going to watch TNA, and I'm probably not going to watch WWE.
True, but it's also the thing of this is entertainment. They don't really categorize themselves as wrestling, really. It's entertainment, so they're going to have to put all those long, boring promos of Dixie Carter trying to explain something 15,000 times, and we still don't understand it. They're going to have to do that, and I kind of wish that they would go back to, maybe it was about 2 summers ago, like they got away from that. It was more wrestling than talking. And I believe it was Bruce Pritchard that was working then. And he kind of tore up the scripts and was like, no, we need to have more wrestling. This is ridiculous. And as we see, he's no longer employed.
Was that when Aries won the title off of Rude?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some really good stuff then, and surprisingly good stuff. But
that all came
Pritchard's
from that
gone.
Guy.
You got John Gaborik and Christy Hemme and a bunch of other people who are not me working in creative now, and we see how well that's going.
Yeah, and I just think that, like, maybe they get that, you know, idea that, hey, maybe we need to cut down on some of this. And when I look at, like, certain old episodes of Impact Wrestling from, like, maybe, like, 2004, 2005, there was talking, but it was never this much. at all. And they will spend their first hour with this long promo, and I don't understand why they do that. It's terrible. They need to get away from that.
And it's not so much the talking in the ring, it's all the backstage skits and all the hokey stuff they shoot. It's just like they're filling time. It's like they shot all this stuff in advance, and they realized, okay, well, we only have X amount of hours to fill, so we need to fill the rest with skits and videos.
Yeah. I don't know. It's something that they just feel like they need to do, and to be honest, it's not going to get that company anywhere the more they keep doing it, because you got Jeff Jarrett coming up with his promotion whenever that is launched, and then you got Ring of Honor, who's getting more markets.
Well, speaking of them, did you see what TNA's been doing with ROH?
No, are they got some type of working agreement or something?
No, there's like some beef where they have been. Let me try to stall while I find the story.
Okay, well, I mean, it's interesting because we do have three pay-per-views in 3 weeks between Slammiversary, the ROH show, and then, of course, Money in the Bank. But, you know, I think TNA's problem is they try so hard to be the WWE, and that's not going to get them anywhere, and that's also not what TNA fans want.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem. Jim Cornette has talked about it a couple times in interviews where, you know, they would kind of be in that mind frame of let's do something different, but then they go back to, oh, let's do this, and you can see the comparisons. You know, you guys are not that company. You're never going to be. WCW tried, and look at them. Just be your own thing. That's the only thing Ring of Honor. They don't try to be like anybody. You know, they hire different guys, some guys you never heard of before. And they go out there and they wrestle. They tell the story with their in-ring work. And with TNA, you got a lot of those guys that are capable of that. But instead, we have a lot of freaking talking. And I love MVP, but he's starting to get like Dixie Carter too, with the constant talking. And I just don't think this program with them is going to go any further. It's not doing any good for anybody.
All right, so TNA has been approaching ROH talent, including Red Dragon, and trying to lure them over to the dark side. I guess ROH is trying to crack down to make sure that there's no loopholes like the Kenny King thing that happened. In addition to that, I guess when they did the show at the Manhattan Center, I guess TNA sent out a street team to pass out flyers to promote their tapings in June. Mm-hmm. And that was in part why at the start of the ROH show, you got the fuck TNA chant. And I think part of that was because of the fans who were lined up outside when they did in the show, and they were bombarded by TNA people. Mm-hmm. And then as well, ROH is doing, you know, TNA used to do that show in Brooklyn at the ballpark, the baseball stadium.
Yeah.
ROH is doing that show now this summer. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the photos this past week of the last couple of house shows TNA has done over the weekend, and one of them was at a baseball stadium in Maryland. I would stay away from doing any stadium shows, period, because they're just not filling house shows. So
I was gonna say that they don't even need to be doing house shows. I've been saying this for years. I don't see
you might
the value. Yeah, I've been saying it for years. I don't see the value for a company like TNA, who, as we know, has had financial difficulties. I don't see the value in doing house shows.
They ought to be losing money at this point.
And that's the thing with them. I don't understand. They have house shows, then they have a television show, which they tape sometimes a couple weeks in advance, and then they have pay-per-view. Like, come on, TNA. Just pick TV and maybe your pay-per-view specials and leave it as that. Like, it's no need to do house shows. Maybe if you're on tour or something like that and you do a house show, like, you know, when you're overseas or something, fine. But, you know, with that whole story you were just talking about, that's been kind of going on for a while. And TNA is kind of now starting to think that there are WWE and are going around approaching talent. With the whole Kenny King thing, from what I understood, Kenny King wasn't really under a contract to Ring of Honor. They just had a handshake agreement. So he was pretty much free to go. But, you know, some guys in the Ring of Honor got a little pissy about that. But I wouldn't, if I was Ring of Honor, I really wouldn't get tight-lipped about it. Because here's the thing.
They should be flattered.
Yeah, they should be flattered because somebody's paying attention to your product. And two, who knows who's in that company that's actually pointing out these guys to go scout them, first of all. But also, Ring of Honor, they've had situations where they've had their talent pool just get, you know, ripped right from under them by both companies. But they've always bounced back. You know, they brought in a lot of new guys. For example, maybe about 2 years ago, they lost Christopher Daniels, Chris Hero, Claudia Castagnoli, like a lot of guys, and Sarah Del Rey. And they bounced back from it. They got AJ Styles back in there. You know, they got a lot of these great guys from over in Japan working there. So I don't think they should be so worried about it, but it's kind of the same thing with these indies companies now. They're kind of, certain promotions have their issues with Ring of Honor because they know if they pick a certain guy off the indies that once they get signed that contract with Ring of Honor, they won't be able to be on the indies now. So you kind of got the whole business thing. Everybody is so worried about their guy being taken off the show, but I mean, I wouldn't really be worried because before you know, they're going to be fired within 6 months from TNA. They're going to be back at Ring of Honor.
Well, to me, just all evolves. Yeah, the business was so much better in terms of for the workers, you know, I guess 05, 06, 07, when you had a working agreement between TNA and ROH. And I think that, you know, it's become so petty. And you know, these are two companies that should not, you know, you're the number two and number three company in the country, and that's pretty much just by default. You know, you shouldn't be at each other's throats. You should be working together, helping mm-hmm. each other. TNA should be trying to offer a different product, not only from the WWE, but also from ROH. You know, they should be some sort of a middle alternative to those two products. But, you know, because of the people in charge, particularly in TNA, you know, you see bad business decisions, bad decisions in terms of cultivating an industry for the workers. And, you know, that Spike TV contract, when it comes up in October, that to me is really what's going to keep them around, what's going to keep them alive. So they need to be putting out their best product now. And the New York shows are really going to be key in that. You know, if those shows can come across looking great on TV and looking like a major league product, you know, that could go a long way in terms of Spike TV giving these guys another contract.
You know, how do you guys, have you guys been watching Ring of Honor lately? Is it me or is AJ Styles like reborn?
He is.
Like it's like, it's the
in
AJ
part,
Styles.
The Bullet Club, that helps.
Yeah.
And the Bullet Club is fucking amazing. You know, I kind of got used to them over in Japan with Prince Devitt, who's apparently been signed. And I just been a fan of all those guys. I just didn't think they were going to bring them over so fast. And I kind of like it. AJ Styles seems like he's got his smile back. He didn't look so happy in TNA the last couple of years. But maybe we're going to see that more guys jumping to Ring of Honor and seeing that AJ looks happy. And it kind of makes me think of when MVP, they announced that he was going to TNA. I thought I would see him in Ring of Honor first because of that close relationship with All Japan Pro Wrestling. Not exactly.
I think TNA just had bigger pockets at the end of the day, even though they have their own share of financial troubles. You know, it's just a better check for MVP. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, that's what it comes down to. AJ, you're right. You know, you see, sometimes all you need is a change of scenery. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was in TNA for over a decade. And, you know, it was time for a change. And his work in New Japan as well as ROH has been, you know, phenomenal, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of ROH being a more viable option than TNA, they're still not in front of as many eyeballs as TNA is if they continue to stay on Spike. And so if you've got the choice between one or the other, if you're thinking with your pocketbook, you're probably going to choose TNA.
I don't know, because I think ROH has more flexibility for independent dates. So you could recoup the money you're not getting in TNA by working like PWG and stuff like that.
Yeah, and a lot of those
guys. That's a solid point.
And a lot of those guys, they have that flexible schedule where they can work PWG or any indie promotion that, you know, maybe they call as their home promotion and they get that clearance for. And they also can go over Japan and work because they still have that strong relationship with Japanese promotions. So they're kind of still getting exposure. It's just not really on worldwide television. So with TNA, it's kind of like you get the exposure, but 9 chances out of 10, you're going to be in a bad program. So that's like the one thing that's crazy about it. I was just shocked that Kazarian left. So I thought he was a lifer.
Well, once Daniels left, it's kind of like, you know, can you have Bert without Ernie?
Yeah, and speaking of Daniels, we can't have what's that stable called, Triple X? We can't form that now. Loki come back. Daniels is gone. Elix Skipper is not there. What? This sucks.
Elix Skipper is still one of the greatest moments in the history of my my viewing in professional wrestling.
Oh, Hurricane, you know you were a fan.
From the top of the cage.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, the great moments in TNA history, few and far between, but that was certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what everybody wants to know, though, Sierra, will you be watching Slammiversary on Sunday?
The chances are I'm not going to have any choice.
Oh, man, that sounds terrible.
I'm going to probably get on Twitter and see my timeline being blown up for constant complaints, and I'm going to just be like, oh, let me turn this on. Let me see what the problem is.
You got to watch. It's the Von Erich boys, the next generation.
You don't have to watch. There's other things on, like the finals. Trust me.
Yeah, speaking of that, with the Von Erichs, yeah.
Did they announce that on TV tonight, Nate?
No, I didn't see anything. It might have been on when I switched over to the finals for a little bit, but no, I didn't see anything at the finals, which is
stupid. You know, you're going Texas.
Oh, your mic. We gotta wrap this up. Your mic just shot.
You sound like Mike Tenay on those Tony Schiavone on those old Nitros. We're running out of time, folks. Yeah, while my mic is working, we will get you out of here, Sierra. But first, let the people know where they can find your podcast, where they can follow you on the interwebs, and you know, check out some of your work.
Well, first of all, you can find me on Twitter at CIARA 92189. That's my birth date. Also, I don't tell people my Facebook or anything because I had stalkers before, so I don't do that. I'm also on Tumblr.
It wasn't Sam Shaw, was it?
No, not exactly. But it was somebody that looks like him, so yeah, that's a little bit disturbing. Also, I am on Tumblr, but if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see my link right to my Tumblr. You can check out my podcast with Sloan, who's one of my great girlfriends. She's hilarious. It is the fangirlcast.podomatic.com. If you guys find me on Twitter and you say, hey, give me the link, I tweet it to you. We just put up a new episode, so go check that out. It's just two girls talking about wrestling and laughing hysterically for probably 2 hours. That's what we do.
It is a good show. Definitely check it out, especially since you'll never hear Sierra on this show again. After what she said about that man called Sting, I don't know if I can ever forgive you.
Well, you act like I said Sid Vicious is my favorite wrestler of all time.
That would have done over better than
really?
That would have gone over better.
Psycho Sid?
He had his moments.
The master okay, and the what about the universe?
Okay, hold on. What about the time he fly ironed his hair?
I try to block the memory out.
Okay.
I prefer the Harvey Whippleman days.
Or could I have just said Barry Horowitz?
Doink. I'll give you a pat on the back for that one.
Brooklyn Brawler.
Pat Patterson.
Well, I do like Pat.
He doesn't like you.
I don't care.
Yeah. He's not. You're not his type.
No.
Well, I know that. I don't want to be his type. That's the thing. But you guys are. Now.
And on that note, that's going to do it for the Ringside Wrap this week. Again, you can check Sierra out on Twitter, listen to the podcast. Good stuff. And she goes down in history as the first female guest on the Kings of Sport podcast. So no matter what happens in your life, they can't take that away from you.
Yeah, and I'd probably be the only female here, you know.
Be like, oh, that,
that's not true. We've tried. It just, you know, it's fallen
through.
You've
tried?
No, we've contacted people I know in industry who are women, and it's just never worked out with the schedule. We have weird schedules, so it's hard for us to even record, let alone get a guest at this point.
Is it the schedules, or are they just scared to be one line with three guys?
It's the schedule.
And probably Alfred, too.
Yeah.
The schedule and Alfred.
Oh, blame it on that guy.
He's not here. Notice he's not here.
Yeah.
But he'll probably listen to this.
That's not even guaranteed. There's times where we've mentioned stuff and he hasn't listened, so it's not 100% sure he'll listen. Yeah,
well, he better listen.
He's the Seth Rollins of our group now.
Yeah.
So he's a thought. Okay.
Anyway. I'm not saying he's not loyal, but.
You said it. I didn't.
We love him anyway. But yeah, that is the one and only Sierra Reed. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back with segment 4 right after this.
For all you fans out there who are wondering what the future holds for Sting, well, the only thing for sure about Sting is nothing's for sure. It's showtime, folks!
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFnews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we gotta give you what you want, gotta give you what you need. And you want and need segment 4, the segment where we take a look at all the ratchetness from the world of sports, entertainment, pop culture, and we give our takes and opinions on it. And this week, Brother Marcus. I'm just gonna say black on black crime is real, even in a literary sense. For those that may not have checked out this particular article, this particular column on Deadspin that talked about somebody who's a controversial figure, a lightning rod, if you will, in the world of sports media and sports journalism. And that is one Jason Whitlock. For those folks that don't know about this article, let them know what's going on, Brother Marcus.
Yeah, so it's a long one. I'm warning you now, if you're going to read the story.
Yeah, it took me two sittings to read it.
But Greg Howard is a writer for Deadspin. He's one of their few black writers. And the story starts off by him telling a story about him earlier this year during Super Bowl week, where he ended up getting sick. And while he was in the hospital, he had a call from Jason Whitlock. And Whitlock was criticizing him for a piece that he did for Deadspin. And that leads to sort of the bad story between Greg Howard and Jason Whitlock and what the relationship was. And essentially what the relationship was is Jason Whitlock is launching a new site at ESPN that is supposed to be the black Grantland, essentially. And he formed this relationship with Greg Howard and wanted to bring Greg on as one of his top writers. And they had this whole back and forth that's been going on for months now where Jason was recruiting Greg to write for him or work for the site. The site still hasn't launched yet, and Greg was presented with the opportunity to work full-time at Deadspin, or he could wait around and wait for Whitlock's site to launch, and he decided to take the offer from Deadspin. And this did not, I guess, sit well with Whitlock, and essentially Whitlock, you know, has, you know, ceased his relationship with this guy. But in between all that, Greg dives into Whitlock's whole life story, essentially, going back to when he was in high school, through college, when he played football at Ball State, through his professional career, and through all the ups and downs that he has experienced, including at ESPN, where he was fired a few years ago and was eventually brought back. But it's a fascinating story that eventually, you know, dives into, you know, is Jason Whitlock basically a sellout, or is he Uncle Tom? And, you know, he did have people on the story that were anonymous that, you know, basically labeled Whitlock as Uncle Tom. That's the part I didn't like. I feel like if you're going to, you know, call someone an Uncle Tom, you need to put your name to it. And Whitlock is someone I don't know personally. I've never met the guy. But he is probably one of the biggest black sports writers out there, easily. And he's someone either you love or hate. I am sort of indifferent. Some of the things that he writes about, I agree with him. And some of the stuff he writes is just so off into left field that I can't just, you know, relate to. But what are your thoughts on Jason Whitlock in general?
I've always thought that, you know, I've admired Jason Whitlock. I haven't always agreed with him, but I have admired him because, you know, to be a sort of counterculture or contrarian in sports journalism, it isn't a new idea, but it is something that if you're a minority, you know, it could lead to a short career. And that's why, you know, people like Jason Whitlock, people like Dan Levitard, who don't follow, you know, kind of, they march to their own beat.
Mm-hmm.
I admire people like that, even if I don't always agree with what they write. That being said, you know, there are some things that Jason Whitlock has said that, you know.
Oh, your mic again.
There are some things that Whitlock says that, you know, or writes that either make me, you know, shake my head and just like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Or, you know, I'm like, that is a really good point that nobody's brought up. So I can see how you could say this guy is, you know, he can be a self-promoter or he can be full of himself or, you know, a bit of an ass. But to say that he's an Uncle Tom, I don't get it. I don't see it. You know, I don't see him. You know, he is critical of black folk at times, but it's never like in the sense of, you know, you're wrong and the white man is right and this is why the white man is right and why you should do what the white man says. It's none of that. It's none of, you know, selling out his race as I guess these anonymous people have said. And that's something that bothers me too, because if you're going to make a claim that serious or that egregious, then you should be man or woman enough to stand behind your words.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that, you know, I don't know the full relationship between the author and Jason Whitlock, but, you know, he might have had some legitimate beefs, some legitimate gripes, but at the same time, the article came across as unnecessarily mean-spirited. And I don't know if, you know, if Whitlock deserved some of that, you know, vitriol that came through in the article.
Yeah, I mean, part of it felt like sour grapes. Part of it felt like something that needed to be said. And then part of it, like you mentioned, was just, I mean, just being mean to be mean, I think. And, you know, I haven't seen Whitlock, if he's responded to the story or, you know, if he's made even mentioned it on Twitter or what. But, you know, I think he's the kind of guy that can, you know, take it. And I'm checking his Twitter now to see if he made any reference to it. But, yeah, it was, you know, it was Nas Ether. I mean, it destroyed him. And whether we see this actual website launch on ESPN, I don't know. It's been almost a year now that he's been back at ESPN.
That's the bigger question out of all of this. And you know, I was listening to the Dan Le Batard show, because they've been really entertaining, especially during the NBA Finals with all the kind of heat craziness. And Bomani Jones was on the show on Wednesday, and they were talking about the article, and you know, Bo, friend of the program, but he was talking about his relationship with Whitlock and how Whitlock, you know, is a complicated human being, but he's also somebody that was very generous to Bo in his career and helped him along. And, you know, he didn't think that he was an Uncle Tom, but, you know, one of the points he raised was this discussion, whether it's warranted or not, you know, it kind of takes the focus off of the bigger question, which is, you know, where is the Black Grantland, quote unquote? You know, where is that repository of thought, you know, and discussion for Black journalists in terms of the world of sports? You know, we don't really have that communal place that we can go and be like, okay, I'm gonna go check out, you know, Black Grantland and see what they're talking about this weekend and get a new take on sports or a new take on pop culture, something that the mainstream is not promoting. And, you know, I think that that's maybe the biggest disservice that, you know, in this guy's attempt to, you know, I don't know, like you said, I don't know if he's illuminating or if he's just hating or maybe a little bit of both. But I think the thing that I want to know and I want to find out about as a fan of sports journalism is, you know, what's going on with this website? What's going on, you know, with this collective, with this thought that, you know, Whitlock is been put in charge of by ESPN? And is it ever going to come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say who's to blame for that, the delay, if that's on ESPN or if that's on Whitlock. I do know personally that there's people that I know who Whitlock has reached out to about interviewing for the editor-in-chief job. This was as recently as a couple months ago. So, I do believe that he's actively trying to get this thing started.
Did he ask you, Marcus Vandenberg?
No, he did not ask me. And, you know, you mentioned the Black Grantland thing. In the story, Greg made reference to the Associated Press sports editors, where there's four Black members out of 300-plus, you know, members of the group. APSC is the group that I did my fellowship in. I think we talked about this on the show. I made those trips to Indianapolis. And I'm actually headed to their national convention in a couple weeks in D.C., and why I don't think the number is four, it's not much more from what I've seen. And part of the reason why I'm in this diversity program that they have is they're trying to reach out to not only women but minorities as well to get them more involved in APSC. And it's needed. You know, when you talk about having the Black Grantland or having all these new websites, it's hard to do with A, without the funding, and B, without having – you know, Black editors, and there's not a lot of me in the industry. And it's sad that, you know, I look around and there's not a lot of us. And I don't know why that is. I do see other black journalists. So I don't think it's a lack of black journalists out there. But I also do believe that there are a lot of journalists who want to be the Michael Wilbons of the world. And we all can be Wilbons. You know, I think you can get a lot farther being behind the scenes like myself as an editor than trying to be on camera. And I think they're, especially the young people, I think people under 30 just haven't grasped the concept. They want to, they're entitled, or they feel entitled to be, okay, I graduated from college and I want to be a columnist. No, it doesn't work that way. You need to pay your dues. You need to work preps and work your way up. And, you know, if you're good enough, you'll be a columnist. But I definitely think there's the people out there. I think they need more direction and more opportunities to become editors. You know, that's the other thing too. If you have people who are qualified, but good luck trying to become an editor somewhere, because a lot of times they're just passed over.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, kind of the younger crop of talent that, you know, is kind of looking at Wilbon and Bomani Jones and folks like that, and it's like, you know, I want to do that. You know, they don't see the years and years that, you know, Bo put in the game. And the years and years and years that somebody like a Michael Wilbon put in the game, or Ralph Wiley. You know, I used to, you mm-hmm. know, get up and watch Ralph Wiley on the sports reporters. And it's like, you know, seeing any sports writer, you know, that is intelligent and articulate and thought-provoking is cool. But then when it's a black guy, you know, that takes it to a whole other level. And seeing guys like that when I was younger, you know, that, you know, obviously I went a different way in terms of broadcasting rather than, you know, the print journalism, but seeing guys like that and having those role models out there, I think was very effective. But it's interesting, you know, because I think there was a point raised in the column about Whitlock where Whitlock was speaking, I guess it was with Bill Simmons, in terms of why there is a lack of, you know, black writers or black journalists. I think the answer was more like a combination of desire and opportunity. And I don't know, you know, I think the desire is there. I think the talent's there. And I don't know. Are the opportunities there, Marcus? Is there a disconnect between those journalism jobs and those editing jobs and the talent that's out there?
I think the opportunity there is there for the right person. I will make no shame about it. I got my position in part because I was a good networker. I met people along the way and I kept in touch with them, and whether it was through internships or through NABJ or anything like that. So I think, you know, networking goes a long way. It's about who you know. It's not so much about what you can do or, you know, how well you can write. And, you know, the talent issue, I think that there might be an issue there. I do notice that, you know, there is a separation between myself, who's now 31, and someone who's just out of college in terms of just the quality of work and what they're producing. So it's a combination of the two, I think, and you factor that in, and you have to multiply that by two when it comes to minorities, unfortunately.
Do you think, in terms of the quality, do you think that, you know, the social media era has – because I think it's been a double-edged sword. I think on the one sense, you know, everybody can be a publisher. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you're practicing your skill, but I don't think you're honing your skill, if that makes any sense. Like, I could go out today and you know, write 50 blog articles.
Yeah.
And that's practice. That's working on a skill, but it's not honing a skill because there's no editorial, you know, there's nobody over top of me saying, this is what's wrong, this is what's right, this is how you can tighten things up and really get across what you're trying to say and economize your words. But, you know, so do you see that may be one of the problems with this younger crop of journalists?
Yeah, I can see how the blog era has hurt people who,
like, they've been able to be journalists, quote unquote, since probably, you know, they're 10 years old.
Yeah, and some have no business writing, period. And, you know, the ones that are unfortunately put out solid work are labeled as a blogger, and they face those issues as well. So,
yeah, I was gonna say, is do you know this author personally?
I don't know,
because I know you said you didn't know Whitlock personally. I was just checking to see if you knew the author personally.
No, and speaking of Whitlock, there was a time a couple years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, where someone approached me and said, hey, you know, Whitlock is trying to identify young black sports writers. You know, do you mind if I pass information along to him? I said, sure. I never heard anything from Whitlock, but I know that he has tried to in the past. And this story sort of alludes to how Greg got in contact with him. Was he's tried in the past to reach out to young black sports writers. And I do think he does want to help young sports writers. But do you agree with his thoughts or opinions? I think he does see the problem that this industry has, and he does want to help. Unfortunately, I think that after reading the story that, you know, some people might not want his help or be associated with his name.
Yeah, which is why, you know, to me, the Uncle Tom thing is just ridiculous and unfortunate, you know, because whether you agree with his opinions or not, whether you think, you know, he could be a bit of a gas bag or not, you know, he is trying to do some good within the fraternity, within the community of, you know, black sports journalists. And something like this is not going to help the cause at all. And I don't know what effect it'll have on the website, but I don't see it being positive. And it just makes it that much harder for something like that to get accomplished.
It wouldn't surprise me if the site never launched at this rate.
Yeah, it's been over a year, and then this thing comes out. So yeah, very well. I could very well see that happening. But I mean, it's the need is there. The hole in the industry is there, and you know, maybe it's not Whitlock or Simmons or somebody like that. Maybe, you know, somebody's got to come fill that hole though, because it is a gaping hole.
The need is there, but then at the same time, you don't want to be boxed in to being just a quote unquote writer, because that's where you run into problems trying to move past that. I think it would be better for Grantland and Deadspin to have more Greg Howards on staff, where you don't need a black Grantland. You can just go to Grantland and read black writers, like Rembrandt Brown or Greg or someone like that. I think that serves a better need overall, as opposed to trying to start a site and hire just black writers, and then you are automatically going to label yourself as a quote-unquote black site, which isn't going to do well in the long term.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, so then maybe the onus needs to be, you know, or the magnifying glass needs to be turned on, you know, Grantland and sites like that. It's like, you know, Bill Simmons, you know, it's cool that you were, you know, talking to Whitlock about this particular site, but why don't you bring some of us onto the main stage?
Well, I mean, Rembrandt's over there, and he's probably one of the most talented writers. He's a black guy. So I think, though, it's on part the employers, and it's in part on the people applying for these jobs and really putting their best foot forward and staying on top of these employers for these opportunities. You know, you can be the most talented writer in the world, but if you're not putting yourself out there in front of these people, then no one will know about it.
I agree. And this is an interesting, if anybody is interested to go back to listen to our conversation we had with Bomani Jones, some of these same topics came up. It's an interesting kind of bookmark or bookend to our talk today.
And actually, I'm on their site now just to make sure I forgot Jonathan Abrams, but so I'm looking at Grantland's contributors, and I see Rembrandt, Wesley Morris, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner from the Boston Globe, and Jonathan Abrams, a friend of mine. So they have three black male writers on their contributors, and then they have another 1, 2, 3, 4 women. So out of their 16 writers, almost half are either minority or women. So they're doing their part. They're doing their part.
Okay, Simmons, I'll let you slide on this one, man.
And they have a Canadian, Jonah Carey. So they have a Canadian in the mix, too.
You always got to have one Canadian in the bunch.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for segment four this week. Again, very, you know, not as much ratchetness this week, more a little bit more thought-provoking, but we can do that from time to time. Before we get out of here, wanted to send a somber shout-out to Ruby Dee, who passed today. Great, great actress and civil rights activist. My favorite role was probably when she played Mother Sister in Do the Right Thing. Her and the mayor, who was Ozzie Davis, who was her husband.
I was in Jungle Fever.
Oh, yeah.
Her and Gator.
Gator.
Got some of my head. Ozzy was he played the Reverend in that one too, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, they were a great, maybe one of the most underrated on screen couples.
Yeah.
And she passed today at the age of 91, in her home in New Rochelle, New York. So, again, you know, a great lady, and then you forget, man, just like 91, like that's. The things that she's seen, the people that she's been around, Martin Luther King, people like that. Like, that's a lot of experiences in life. You know, not just being black, being a woman, being an actress. You know, a lot of great memories there, I'm sure.
Yeah, she lived a great life, and I'm glad it sounds like it was in her sleep, so nothing painful or anything like that, so.
And now her and Ozzy are reunited, so, you know. Ozzy passed in 2005, so, yeah. It's...
Keep it down, you two up there tonight. I don't need to hear you making up for lost time up there in heaven.
Yeah, you might want to put your earmuffs on tonight.
Yeah, Ozzy got his woman back.
The mayor got some things to do. yeah, that's going to do it for this week. Again, a big... shout out to Sierra Reed from the Fangirl Podcast for stopping by and chatting some wrestling with us this week. And you know, not only our first female guest, but she's Mark too.
Yeah, and a bit one thumbs down to Alfred Conaway for blowing us off.
Yeah, she's one of us. She's one of us.
Except for the whole Sting thing.
Yeah, except for the whole Sting thing. I don't know if she'll be back or not, but
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. You know, some lines you just can't uncross. You can't call me Uncle Tom. You can't talk about Sting. That's where I draw the line.
Those two.
Those two. I'm sure I can think of some more.
In that order.
Yeah, in that order. But before we get out of here, Marcus, where can people find you, check out your work, hit you up on Twitter, and just generally tell you how much they enjoy listening to you each and every week?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
You can find Alfred Cunningham out there on the internet somewhere. I'm not going to dignify his Twitter account. But this is nasty. I mean, you know, I was gonna throw shade on him, but, you know.
It's too easy.
Yeah, if he doesn't show up next week, though, then we got a problem. Then it'll be, what, like 3 weeks in a row?
No, it was last week he was there. Well, he was there for most of it. I wasn't there.
I think you and Alfred are like the same person.
Well, in 2 weeks, I won't be here.
Neither one of you can exist when the other is present.
Yeah.
You have the lightness in the dark. and you can check me out at N8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us, KOSPOD on Twitter, KOS_POD. Hit us up on Stitcher, on iTunes, as well as podcastland.com. Facebook.com/thekingsofsport, and of course check us out on place to be nation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture. So I think that's gonna do it for this week, Marcus.
That should do it. I should be back next week. Oh wait, take that back, let me check. Maybe on Wednesday. I have to work on Thursday.
We'll play that by ear, and I think I'll go out and get a new microphone.
Please do. Amazon.com.
Yeah, Amazon.com. Click on the link and save myself some money, I think. I think that's how it works. All I know is it helps the show in a roundabout way.
Yeah. And that's you should buy Alpha 1 too while you're at it.
No, I need to see if they sell internet connections on Amazon. That's Alfred's problem. But that's going to be it for this week. By the time we talk next week, we may already have a NBA champion crowned.
Yeah, game six would be Tuesday, so.
Yeah, we may have a new NBA champion as well as a Stanley Cup champion. And
don't change it because Game 7 is on Wednesday. So
maybe Marcus showing up in Bill and Jamie showing up in LA Kings gear.
Yeah, let's hope.
Either I'm excluded from this bet. So
you are, yeah, you're good either way.
I'm neutral. I'm like Ricky Martin. I'm just me. I'm just gonna be myself. So that's how we're going to end it this week. So for Marcus Vanderberg, for conspicuous by his absence, Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. See you next week, everybody, because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.